This is a check for $9.27. I just wanted you to see it just so you know how generous I am before I put it in the offering. Totally kidding, I already put it in my bank account. This is written out to me from Hooker versus Sirius XM Radio Incorporated. It came to me in the mail this week because I entered into a class action lawsuit against Sirius XM. The judge that the case went before decided that they committed $9.27 worth of pain and suffering in my life and gave me that reward. Now, I don't know exactly what they did to me. I think it had something to do with sending me too many things in the mail and asking me to upgrade, and I had to keep opening the letters, endangering myself with the paper cuts, and then putting them in the recycling. And so when I got the piece of mail that said that there was a lawsuit, I was all in. And so I filled out my information, and a judge ruled in my favor. And I am grateful for that particular judge. I don't know who he is, and I would write him a letter, but that would cost like 10% of my earnings, so I'm not going to do that. If you were to take a case before court, if you had some sort of complaint, what would you want in the judge that hears your case? What kind of characteristic would you like to define that judge that is going to make a decision for or against you? Would you want them to be kind? Would you want them to be compassionate? Do you want them to be forgiving and merciful? Would you want for them to be just and righteous? We would say that that should be the ultimate characteristic of a judge, that they will follow the law no matter what. They won't bring in their own personal preferences. They won't bring in other considerations. They will follow the law no matter what. That's what we look for in a judge, is a sense of righteousness. Unless, of course, we're not totally convinced that we're on the right side of justice. If we're brought before a judge, if we're serious, if we are honest about it, justice might not ultimately be the thing that we're looking for. We might really just want the judge to rule in our favor, whether we're on the right side or not. When you get pulled over in your car and the officer says to you, "Do you know why I pulled you over?" You probably aren't thinking, "I hope that this guy is just, or this woman is just." You're thinking, "I hope that they're kind and forgiving," especially if you know why they pulled you over. You want them to rule in your favor. If you go before God, you think about his characteristics. You think about him as the ultimate judge. What characteristic do you most hope to see from God? You'd probably say his love, probably say his forgiveness and his grace. But would you say his righteousness? Would you say that his righteousness is important when you are standing before him as your judge? Today in Psalm 143, we are going to see David going before God, pleading his case as a plaintiff in court. And the characteristic of God that David appeals to is his righteousness. David asks for God to make a judgment on the basis of God's sense of justice. He is praying for God to reveal his righteousness. We are coming here to the end of our series called The Winter Songs. We are exploring the different psalms of lament in the Bible. And as we conclude this series, this is the last lament psalm in the book of Psalms. And many believe that it was put here at the end because it is the most mature lament. It is the one where David has had the most time to really think critically about God, to really argue his case before God. And so this is the ultimate conclusion that David has come to. When he comes before God, he asks God to hear his case on the basis of God's righteousness. Psalm 143, verse 1. Hear my prayer, O Lord. Give ear to my pleas for mercy. In your faithfulness, answer me. In your righteousness. When we talk about God's righteousness, we're talking about God as the standard for everything that is right, the ultimate standard for our ethics. Righteousness and justice are the same words in Hebrew and in Greek. It means that God is, the original meaning is perfectly straight. There is no variation in him. He has a sense of perfect holiness in his character, in his person, and in his actions. He is light. There is no shadow in him. God is righteous. So David is asking God to answer him on the basis of his righteousness. And David realizes that as he brings up this characteristic, that he doesn't have that same righteousness in his own life. Verse 2, enter not into judgment with your servant, for no one living is righteousness before you. Standing in the light of God's righteousness, he sees all of the smudges of sin in his own life. That is true of every single person that stands before God. That we go before God, no one is perfect. That is a universally agreed upon statement, even in our culture, that no one is perfect. If anyone says that, yes, you are perfect just the way you are, and we start to press them on that, they will say, well, there are certain things that you have done that you should not have done. There are certain things about you that should change. No one is perfect, and everyone is going to agree upon that. So we go before this righteous God. You are just asking for God to reveal our sin. It's kind of like going to court. I literally had this happen to my friend. He was on his college cross-country team. He's a really good runner, and the coach wouldn't allow the team to run in any extra races during the year. You could only do, you know, what the team was doing. And there was a local race in the community. He really wanted to run it, so he decided he was going to just register under a fake name. So he chose like Adam Johnson or something like that. And he enters this race and he actually won the race. And so his name, or this fake person's name, Adam Johnson, gets published as the winner of the race. They put it in a plaque in a hospital somewhere. And this person doesn't actually exist. And so that happened. No one knew about it. That was just the end of the story, or so he thought. Until he went to court as a witness. And when he's on the witness stand, the attorney for the defendant asks him a question. Does the name Adam Johnson sound familiar to you? Somehow, this lawyer had figured it out, and he thought no one knew about it. And that would be true of any of us if you had an omniscient lawyer working against you. They could always dig up something in your life. And so when our culture says no one is perfect, what we end up saying then is that because we can't be perfect, well then, we start to minimize God's righteousness. Well, if we can't be perfect, if we're so far from God's righteousness, then we start to actually make God more like us. We start to think that God is also like us in the sense that, you know, maybe his righteousness isn't that big of a deal. Maybe that's not something that we really want to think about. But here's David in this psalm going before God, reminding God of his righteousness, even though he realizes that this exposes his own sin. And this has a dramatically powerful effect on his life. First, when you bring up God's righteousness, you start to take it seriously. It starts to change the way that you think about God and about life. He says in verse 3, "The enemy has pursued my soul. He has crushed my life to the ground. He has made me sit in darkness like those long dead. Therefore, my spirit faints within me. My heart within me is appalled." He is getting attacked from without by enemies and from within by his own heart. And this is really weighing on him. He says, essentially, he is being pushed into the ground by those that are attacking him. And so today we think, well, we don't have enemies who are trying to kill us. We don't have somebody who's trying to destroy our lives. And maybe that's true in one sense, that you have a relatively carefree life in the sense that at least there's not someone that's ultimately committed to your destruction. Except that that's not really true at all. Every single one of us has someone who is ultimately committed to our destruction. And that is the evil one that Jesus tells us to pray that we are to be delivered from. We have an adversary whose entire mission in life is to rob and kill and destroy. Satan has aligned himself against every single human being, but especially those who are children of God. We don't feel the seriousness of this unless we start to elevate God's holiness and his perfection. And then suddenly we begin to realize that we are in a battle for our souls, that this adversary is working against us in every single way, trying to keep us from God. If God is just like us, then we minimize the things in our lives. But if God is suddenly this righteous, perfect being, we begin to see that those things that are happening in our lives around us and in us have incredibly serious consequences. When we elevate God's righteousness, we start to see the seriousness of life. We start to long for that righteousness within ourselves. David begins to pray to God that he would work that righteousness in him. He says this in many different ways. Verse 10, "Teach me to do your will, O God, for you are my God. Let your good spirit lead me on level ground." He begins to want to live the same kind of life that is matching, that is up to the standards of God's righteousness. He says in verse 6, "I stretch out my hands to you. My soul thirsts for you like a parched land." Your soul actually begins to thirst for God when you realize how different he is from you. When you realize how serious the battle is. When you realize how incredibly weak you are, you begin to be desperate for God. And pray for him to work in you that same righteousness that you see in him. He begins to draw you to him, or you begin to run away from him. There was a monk just over 500 years ago who felt the weight of the righteousness of God. A monk named Martin Luther, who this was the key phrase in his life, the righteousness of God, God's standard of perfection, that would cause him to spend hours in the confessional booth confessing every single sin that he could think of, that would cause him to take whips and to tear apart his back as penance for his sins, that would make him lie naked on a cold floor, refusing to sleep in his bed because of his own sin and the fact that he didn't deserve it. Martin Luther says that he actually came to hate God because of his righteousness. And that will happen. If you really take it seriously, you can no longer be neutral about God. You are either drawn to him or you are pushed away from him. And we see that in the life of God's righteous Son, Jesus Christ. Those who realized their incredible need for him were drawn to him. The prostitutes and the drunkards. Those who were evidently far, were obviously far from God, were drawn to the Holy One, Jesus Christ, because he had something that they didn't have. And those who hid their sin really well, that externally appeared to have it together, but internally were like rotting corpses, those are the ones that were pushed away from Jesus Christ, who didn't want to be near him because they were afraid that he was going to reveal their sin. The thing about Jesus is that when he would go to someone who was unclean and he would touch them, Jesus wouldn't take on their sickness. He wouldn't take on their filth. He himself wouldn't become unclean, which is what everyone else feared, and that's why they stayed away from them. Instead, Jesus would give them his righteousness. He would heal them, or the same word in Greek for heal is save. They would receive his holiness instead of him taking on or becoming sin like them. And so here's the righteous one of God, and the Pharisees, those who hid their sin, realized that they could not be neutral about this man. They couldn't just ignore him. They either had to join him or they had to get rid of him. And so that's what happened. Jesus Christ is arrested. Jesus Christ spends the night being shuffled around, and when the sun comes up, he finds himself on trial. And so this psalm prays in verse 8, "Let me hear in the morning of your steadfast love, for in you I trust. Let me hear of your mercy and your salvation." Instead, this righteous one hears the condemnation of the courts, the Jewish and Roman courts, condemning him for things that he had not done. Jesus Christ is the only perfect one who stands in our place condemned. And then as Jesus Christ is hanging on the cross with two thieves on either side of him, both knowing that they deserved that punishment, one of them mocks him, but the other one looks at Jesus and he says, "Today, when you are in your kingdom, remember me." Jesus says, "Today you will be with me in paradise." He's looking into the face of Jesus. He was looking into the righteousness of God. Jesus Christ is the answer to the prayer in Psalm 143 that God would deliver us from evil, that God would work that righteousness in us. He did that by sending his Son to die in our place. Instead of giving us the condemnation we deserved, God gives that to his Son, and then he takes his Son's righteousness and he gives it to us. He exchanged places with us so that God himself can maintain his own righteousness. Verse 11, this is the climax of the prayer. For your name's sake, O Lord, preserve my life. In your righteousness, bring my soul out of trouble. The psalmist is praying that God would do it for the sake of his reputation, because he himself is righteous. But there is a problem there. A righteous judge cannot dismiss sin. If there were a judge who just let everybody off the hook, we would say that that judge has no sense of righteousness. That maybe it's nice if they let off the minor offenses, but they've got to do something about sin. And God solves that problem by sending his righteous Son in our place. He solves that problem not by destroying us, not by just overlooking our sin, but by actually making us righteous, by putting our sin on Jesus and crediting us with Jesus' righteousness. If I were to go into a fancy real estate place, and I didn't even know what those places were, so I had to Google it. So like Sotheby's or Christie's, apparently. That's if you've got a ton of money, that's where you go to buy your house. And so maybe a few of you, that's where you got your houses, I'm not sure. So if I were to go in there and I wore my nicest clothes, which is the suit that I got for my wedding 6 years ago for $75 at Kohl's. It's the nicest outfit I own. If I walk into that agency, they would not take me seriously, especially when they see my 2009 Hyundai Santa Fe parked outside. They would know that I have no reason being there. I'm not going to be able to afford a shack that would be listed with them. But if I took out a letter that was signed by my uncle Warren Buffett that said, he is coming in my name, give him whatever I want, I would suddenly have the full attention of that agency, because someone had come in the name of one of the wealthiest people in the world. When we come before God, we do not come because we are good. We don't come with any of our own deeds to hold before him and say, God, I deserve this. We come before him in the name of Jesus Christ, who has an unlimited reserve of righteousness poured into us. It is the name that gets God's attention. It is the name that gives us the favor of God and is our only hope before a righteous God. David says in verse 8, let me hear in the morning of your steadfast love, for in you I trust. He comes before God not as the king and leader of Israel, not as the man after God's own heart, but a servant who trusts in God. It is faith that makes us righteous. God answers our prayer for righteousness by making us righteous through his Son, Jesus Christ. 1 John 1, verses 8 and 9 says that if we confess our sins to God, he is faithful and just, or faithful and righteous, to forgive us our sins. It is in our favor for God to be righteous, for God to be perfect and exalted above everything else, to be absolutely nothing like us, because then we can go to God and say, God, because of your righteousness, we ask that you would hear our prayers, that you would make us righteous and make us more like you, because we are your servants.